Principles of Economics, My Complete Guide to Understanding Economics, is now available in hardcover, audiobook, and ebook from SaifEddin.com, Amazon, and many more booksellers worldwide. And now, I am also teaching a course based on this book on my website, SaifEddin.com. Principles of Economics will run the whole academic year, from September to June, and will have a new lecture every 2 weeks, as well as weekly live online discussion seminars open to learners from all over the world and from all walks of life. Whether you're a student, a professional, or a retiree, you are making economic decisions every day, and this course will arm you with the wisdom of centuries of economists to improve your economic decision-making. You'll also get a free book of Principles of Economics if you sign up for the course. Go to SaifEddin.com and sign up now. The Bitcoin Standard Podcast is brought to you by Orange Pill App, the Bitcoin-only social network that connects you with high-signal Bitcoiners, events, and now merchants as well. If you're like me and can't stop talking about Bitcoin, you know how challenging it can be to talk to the no-coiners and how nice it is to talk to someone who gets you. With the Orange Pill app, you can find the Bitcoiners near you and they can replace the no-coiners in your life. You can organize events and meetups with local Bitcoiners, and wherever you travel, you can meet up with local Bitcoiners all while being as anonymous as you like. So if you want to build your local network of Bitcoiners, find a Bitcoin meetup or merchants accepting Bitcoin, head over to orangepillapp.com to sign up or download the app from the App Store or Google Play Store and send me a DM so we can get connected. The Bitcoin Standard Podcast is brought to you by CoinKite. CoinKite are my favorite makers of Bitcoin hardware. They produce the legendary OpenDime, the first Bitcoin bearer asset, as well as the reliable Cold Card hardware wallet, the excellent stainless steel seed plates for storing your seed phrases, and the block clock. Now, CoinKite have produced the Sats card, a card the size of a credit card which can store Bitcoin and works great as a gift. CoinKite have just produced a limited edition gorgeous Bitcoin Standard Sats card, which carries the Bitcoin Standard logo, and you can get it from coinkite.shop/Bitcoin Standard. Use the code Bitcoin Standard to get 5% off your purchase. This podcast is also brought to you by the Bitcoin Way, your professional Bitcoin IT team offering you personalized, secure, and comprehensive solutions for every step along your Bitcoin journey. The Bitcoin Way offer live concierge service to guide you with your Bitcoin cold storage, running your node, privacy best practices, inheritance planning, corporate strategy, and multi-sig solutions. They don't touch your coins, they guide you through the process of acquiring your coins and securing them. If you'd like to make your setup safer and more reliable, book a consult with them and see what they have to suggest. If you want to give someone the gift of Bitcoin, get them this professional service that will ensure they start off knowing exactly how to manage their coins and not lose them. Go to thebitcoinway.com and start Bitcoining more confidently. Hello and welcome to the Bitcoin Standard Podcast Seminar. Today we have as our guest Thomas Seman, who was one of my students at the Lebanese American University in Byblos in Lebanon, where I taught him microeconomics in 2014. And Thomas was a freshman in his first year in college at that time, and he was expecting to walk into a class where he was going to be learning, you know, regular economics in the kind of irrelevant equations that are usually taught, and got a lot more than he bargained for when he heard about Bitcoin in that class. And over the years, he has blossomed into a full-on toxic Bitcoin maximalist, posting stake pics on Twitter and trying to tell people about the benefits of hodling and getting laughed at by all kinds of idiots for daring to offer a practical solution to the kind of monetary and financial problems that face people around the world. So given the events over the last couple of years in Lebanon, where the currency has witnessed mass destruction of its value, losing something like 70% or 80% of its value over the last 2 years,
And the banking system was effectively insolvent and shut down to depositors. And it's still in limbo, effectively. Given all of these developments, I thought it would be worth digging into how these things have unfolded, what they tell us about fiat monetary systems and hyperinflation, and how Bitcoin has helped in these situations, and what has been what has it been like being a Bitcoiner at the forefront of a currency collapse. And I think you know, hopefully this is passing curiosity for most listeners, but unfortunately I suspect it might be a far more depressing, useful toolkit of advice for how to handle your coming national currencies devaluation as the years unfold over the years. Because given what has been happening all over the world over the last year, I think we can confidently say there will definitely be a few more Lebanons in the past coming years, and maybe not a few, maybe a lot of Lebanons in the last in the coming few years. So, Thomas, thank you just so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Saif. It's a great honor actually to be here. I told you it feels like the Bitcoin Olympics being in one of your seminars.
Well, so, thank you for joining.
So yeah, I wanted to start by, you know, talking a little bit about how I got into it and what Bitcoin was to me, and after the crisis, what it is to me right now. So I got into it as you know, when I first joined your class back in 2014. I saw you talking about, you know, the conventional economics and how it is not real economics. So I got into, you know, the Austrian school and actual sound economics. I started going on the Mises Institute and learning more about that and about sound money and all of these things. And then I started reading more about Bitcoin. And you didn't talk about it a lot in this specific class, but I joined some of your seminars at university where you were talking about it and where you tried to link it to, you know, the Rhystone and all of the history of money. And that was very interesting to me. So I tried to learn a little bit about it, and I made my first purchase, I think back in 2015. That was when I first bought my first fraction of Bitcoin, and I forgot about it. But then 2017 came and I saw the price skyrocketing, and I FOMOed in even more. And I thought we were going to 100K back then, but I'm glad we didn't, because I didn't have enough. So then after it dumped back to something around 3K, I graduated university. I got my first job, and I made sure to keep stacking, keep increasing my Bitcoin stack more and more. And to me back then, it was just this technology that it could make me rich, right? I knew that it was sound money, but it didn't affect me. You know, the fiat money didn't affect me as much as it does right now. So from 2017 until 2019, Bitcoin to me was, you know, a way to be rich. But in 2019, specifically in October 2019, when the financial crisis took place and the banking crisis and the economic crisis, I realized that Bitcoin is not just a tool to get rich. It's more of a tool to be free. It's actually, now I am more free, I am more sovereign than my colleagues, my friends, my family, my cousins. I actually sound like a genius to all of these people. So that's the best feature of Bitcoin to me right now. And ever since the crisis, I started to maybe try do my part to teach more people about Bitcoin, more people in Lebanon about Bitcoin, because I think this is the solution. All other solutions being put on the table, are just not effective. Lebanon, if you probably know that, Lebanon is the only democratic country in Lebanon in the Middle East, not in the Middle East, in the Arab world, if you want to say. And we are suffering because of democracy more than anyone else. So we had like 30 years or maybe more than 30 years of revolutions and, exercising our democratic rights. And more we are just going through decivilization instead of actually going through progress or development. So after the financial crisis that started in 2019, and we are still going through this right now, many new intellectuals, one could say, were trying to convince people of, you have to vote better, you have to vote harder, if you want to say. And they were trying to tell people that there's an alternative, and the alternative is socialism, maybe, and the alternative is more welfareism. But no one and everyone, not only are they gullible about Bitcoin, but they are also dismissing it. We are talking about the intellectuals. So this is the difference between the people on the ground and the intellectuals or the politicians or the elites of the society. Because in 2015 or 2017, it was probably just me and you, Saifuddin, in Lebanon talking about Bitcoin, right? There was no one interested in this.
Yeah, I'm getting laughed at for talking about Bitcoin. So a little bit of context. Up until 2019, the Lebanese lira had been pegged to the US dollar for about 29 years. So from 1990, an entire generation of Lebanese people had only ever seen their lira at that fixed rate with the US dollar. So it was as good as the dollar as far as anybody was concerned. And so inflation was something that had happened once in Lebanon, and it happened because of the war, during the war. And so people had kind of dismissed it as a, it's something that happens to Latin American countries on TV. Exactly. But it happens to us when we have war. But, now the lira is more or less is stable at 1500, and the central bank is managing to keep the lira stable. But then in 2019, the cracks began to show. In the summer of 2019, suddenly, I remember the first signal that something was wrong was that at that time, first the central bank announced that they encourage people to start using more electronic payments and that this is much better. And at the same time, they developed a premium at the exchange shops in Lebanon. So when you wanted to buy lira, when you wanted to buy a dollar, it was no longer at the 1500 rate. You had to pay a little bit extra for dollars. And that was the first time that this had happened in 29 years. And at the same time, you have the central bank telling people, hey, by the way, stop using cash. It's not very useful. It's much more efficient to be using all these modern payment methods that we are introducing for you. And then the premium started to increase. And that was in the summer of 2019. And, in typical monetary collapse fashion, it was just the same cycle of central bank and government coming up and saying, everything is under control, stop freaking out. And behind them, everything is falling apart. So tell us more about what happened in 2019 and how did the fiat software start to glitch on you?
The syllabus for my new online economics course, Principles of Economics, is now available on saifuddin.com. The course will take place over 18 lectures, each based on one chapter from my new book, Principles of Economics, which will be available for free as an ebook for everyone registering for the course. Lectures will be released once every 2 weeks on Mondays, starting on the 25th of September, 2023, and will be available in video and audio format. Live discussion seminars will be held once a week on Thursdays at alternating time slots, 12 hours apart, to ensure learners can attend from all over the world. I'm happy to announce that I have set up my new publishing house and online bookstore, The Safe House, which will be publishing and delivering the best Bitcoin and Austrian economics books worldwide in hardcover, audiobook, and ebook formats. Go to thesafehouse.com to buy my latest book, Principles of Economics, as well as the Fiat Standard and the Bitcoin Standard. And now I'm also publishing Fiat Food, Matthew Lisiak's amazing investigation into how inflation ruined our diet and health. And I'm also publishing Lynn Alden's Broken Money, her masterful exploration of the failures of the global financial system and how Bitcoin fixes it. This is a Bitcoiner's bookshop, so the books are printed in beautiful cloth hardcover made to last, with a nice colored dust jacket on top. Go to thesafehouse.com and get yours now.
Yes, so I experienced this firsthand because I work in a company in a finance department. So when we were engaging with any bank, back in the day, we used to pay our suppliers in dollars or in Lebanese lira, it didn't matter. You know, so, but then whenever we tried to make a payment in dollars to a local supplier, the bank would reject it. They would say, why would you pay a local supplier in dollars? You have the Lebanese lira, use that instead. So
when was that exactly?
That was in the beginning of 2019.
The beginning of 2019.
Yes. That's okay. Because we are a big company. This measure was not made on small individuals. But because we are a big corporation, we have big balances and big payments. So they were trying to stop us, you know, gradually from paying too much in dollars. So that was, for me, the first sign to what was going on. So it started that way. And then gradually, I think in September 2019, it was the first time at the exchange, at the exchange houses, the rate changed from 1,520 or 30, and it jumped to 1,600. That was in September. A lot of people back then rushed to buy dollars because why it happened? Because the banks essentially stopped giving or stopped exchanging too much lira for dollars. So any big amounts of exchange from lira to dollars had to go through a independent exchange or house. So that was maybe the second sign to me. And of course, in October 2019, when the protests started, the banks shut down for 2 weeks. I was reading some of your, the first chapter of the Fiat Standard, and I saw somewhere it said that the banks on a never-ending bank holiday. So this is what's happening in Lebanon. Ever since October 2019, the banks, literally shut down for 2 weeks in October. But in fact, practically, they've been shut down ever since. So ever since the mid of October, we stopped being able to withdraw dollars. We stopped being able to exchange dollar for 1,500, which is the pegged amount. Capital controls started. You could only withdraw like somewhere around $200 per week. Even if you have like $1 million in your bank account, you could only withdraw $200. Then after 1 or 2 months, they stopped all dollars withdrawals. After 2 weeks of stopping completely withdrawals of dollars, they decided to issue a new peg for dollars stuck in the banks. So now you can go to the bank if you have $1,000, you can take them for Lebanese lira, but at the peg of 3,900. And this started in 2020, and back then it was the dollar in the black market was around 5,000 Lebanese lira. And when they took this decision of printing more Lebanese lira, the rate jumped from somewhere of 5,000 Lebanese lira to 10,000 Lebanese lira in just a month and a half. And now it's back down to 8,500 and 9,000. It just fluctuates in this manner. And I I have a few data here for how much.
Yeah, if you want to share your screen.
Okay, I will share my screen. Okay, this is it. I'm just going to show you here. Share screen.
I always love to run numbers on this seminar.
Yes. As you can see here, this is the M1 supply versus yes. BTC.
I have the same chart. I wanted to show up the same chart.
Okay. So yeah, this is it. I got this data from Banque du Liban, the Central Bank of Lebanon. As you can see here in the blue, this is how much it's being printed. So September 2019, October 2019, suddenly in November 2019, the surge started. So we went from somewhere around 10,000 in billion LBP to somewhere around 34,000 billion in September 2019. And as you can see, this
September 2020.
September 2020, yes. And as
yes,
you can
in
see,
a year, in a year and 2 months, basically, or
in a year, yes, the supply tripled.
Yeah,
more than tripled even. And as you can see, this the gray line is the Bitcoin price and LBP. So
wow.
As you print, the Bitcoin price number goes up. So this is what's been happening in terms of printing. So you may ask, and I'm gonna let you, you know, carry on with this, but this essentially is happening because the central bank or the banks want to bail themselves out. They have a lot of dollars. They have a lot of dollars deposits. They can't give you dollars, so they're printing lira and giving you that instead. And at the same time, Lebanon, which is a population of 4 million people, so let's say there is around, I don't know, 500 million people who are eligible to work. There's more than 300,000 employees in the public sector. And since the government is basically bankrupt and they don't have any income, they're just printing money and paying more public expenditure for their employees. So this is the financial crisis in numbers, if you want to see it.
Yeah, it's I was looking at the same charts and I tweeted these out a few weeks ago. It's mm-hmm. it's quite shocking to see them because the because I mean it's you think the monetary system is getting more complicated and more sophisticated, but really ultimately it's in the case of a place like Lebanon, it just goes down to the printer, and like the printer just went into overdrive. So before then, you look at the data for these metrics. I'm going to share the data for M3 now. If you look at the data for M3, it was on a continuous rate of growth up until the end of 2017 and the beginning of 2018. And that's when things started to plateau. 2018, M3 stopped growing. And in late 2019, M3 began to fall.
Exactly.
So M3 is the broad money supply, which includes credit, which effectively includes all of the fake loans that the central bank had been giving. So that bubble had been growing. It's a typical Austrian story. The bubble had been growing, and then it stopped growing at the end of 2018. And so then what happens at the end of 2018? What happens is that we see the growth shift to the chart that you showed us, which is the M0. And so what happens at the end of 2018 and at the middle of 2019 is when, you know, it takes them 6 months to, you know,
realize
put the right guns next to the right heads and manage to start operating the printer. And then the M0 just shoots off. You know, the Ponzi of credit couldn't keep expanding, so the Ponzi of credit began to drop. And when the Ponzi of credit couldn't keep expanding, they needed to keep the Ponzi going, and that's when they clicked print. And that's when the physical money supply tripled in a short period. This is up until, yeah, it's 25,000. I think this is a little older than your data. Oh, no, this is M3. Yours was M0. No, sorry, this is M0, yeah.
Mine was M1, yeah.
Oh, yours was M1. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, but it's the same. It shows the same story. That's when the new bills came in. And so now in Lebanon, the value of the physical bill has gone down. You know, even putting Bitcoin aside, even just comparing it to the dollar, it has lost 70 or 80% of its value. What's the current exchange rate? I think it was 8,500 last time I checked, right?
Yes, it's somewhere around this right now.
Yeah, so it went from 1,500 to 8,500, and it looks like there's really no reason to suspect that it will stop. Like, this wasn't an orderly devaluation that they did, and you can expect things to settle down at 8,500 or at 10,000, because there is just a completely corrupt political system that is utterly reliant on this printer. You know, they all eat from this printer. And so now that this printer has been engaged, they have no interest in stopping it. And in fact, if you look at how the governments have been acting, it's more of the same. You know, it's taking on more liabilities and pretending that you can just wish these liabilities away through the magic of the money printer. It's pretty sad, and it's also very typical of the Austrian story. Where was the sector of misallocation in the Lebanese economy? What do you think, Thomas?
So I think Lebanon is basically a ultimate planned economy. So what was happening and why we saw this M3 supply going up so fast? Lebanon was known to be the bank of the Middle East, if you want to know. So what was happening back then is that Lebanon, or the banking sector in Lebanon, had very high interest rates. They were very attractive to anyone. And Lebanon has a big diaspora population, and they are kind of wealthy. So they all jumped on it and they put their money in the banks in Lebanon, and they were getting, you know, they were happy. They were getting their high interest rates, something no bank in the entire world was offering. So that was what led this supply of M3 to go up like this. And also we have the banking secrecy, which is not also available in many countries. I think it's only available in Switzerland and some other country in the world. So Lebanon was basically selling the banking sector. This is the only thing that we had here. And we were trying to...
be fair, you know, the Lebanese banking sector really was the real deal up until the 1970s. Up until the 1970s, the Lebanese lira was practically on the gold standard. The lira was 91%... gold up until 1975, yes. I think. Lebanon really was the banking center of the Middle East. So at that time, in the Middle East, there was not a banking center that was as developed as Lebanon, which was effectively like Switzerland in Europe. It was Lebanon in the Middle East. It had bank secrecy, and it had a gold standard, and it was accepting capital from all over the Arab world and the Middle East broadly. So it had that reputation, which was obviously tarnished in the war. But then they tried to redeem it after the war, and they succeeded to a large extent, particularly with Lebanese expats, because Lebanese expats traveled all over the world, but there was a very strong pitch to convince them to put their savings accounts in Lebanon, and a lot of them did.
Exactly. So I think to go to your point of being on the gold standard, Lebanon still has the third biggest gold per capita in the world. So there's a lot of gold in Lebanon. But the problem is that people tend to think, or whoever put their money in Lebanese banks tend to think, that Lebanon, or the banking sector in Lebanon, is still the way it was back in the 60s or before the Civil War. So for some reason, everyone believed that the banking sector in Lebanon is safe and it's a safe haven, and they just put their money there. And, you know, if you go to a Lebanese bank, it's probably, you will probably see that the banks are very developed and they have this huge skyscrapers. And it was basically the thing that's happening in Lebanon. If you get a job in a bank, you're just well off. Suddenly, everything changed in 2019. And I think this whole thing was just a big pretend. They were just pretending to be something that they are not. But in terms of services,
the bubble was in banking saving accounts. I think it's the malinvestment sector was all of the savings, because that money was used to effectively finance government borrowing. Effectively, what this money did was that it was at the central bank. It was for all of the people's deposits, and it was backing the bank's reserves, and it was also backing the currency. And because it was backing the currency, it allowed the government to effectively finance its spending by borrowing, backed by these reserves. And the idea, of course, is the Keynesian idea here, that government borrowing is costless because government can just print money. And, you know, as we all know, if you're educated and you've been to university, you've been taught that government bonds are risk-free because of this. And a lot of people bought Lebanese bonds based on this premise, because government can always print money, and it can always print money because it has all of these checking accounts and all of these saving accounts with all of that money backed in them from all of these expats from all over the world. And yet it turns out that didn't quite work out. And it seems... In 2019, I think what may have triggered this, and what may have been the trigger that made the shift from boom to bust, it may have been the collapse of a bank called Jamal Bank, which was probably related to the new sanctions that were being introduced, I think. Because once you started limiting the ability of banks to send money back and forth, you undermine their liquidity, you close down a couple of bank accounts, and the sanctions get stronger. Immediately, you know, the financial position of many of these banks begins to get compromised, and the party is over, and now everybody's scrambling for liquidity.
Yes. I think just to go back to your idea of business cycle, you know, when I read about the business cycle, it's usually done because of low interest rates and there's a lot of people taking out loans from the banks, which leads to inflation and a lot of malinvestments. In the case of Lebanon, it was the opposite. That we were financing one entity, which is the government, and the malinvestment wasn't just in the government. So it was centralized malinvestment, if you want to say it. So that's why it's even more dangerous than what happens in the countries with low interest rates. So overall, we must say that fake interest rates are just bad. So it shouldn't happen. And concerning the point of the sanctions, I think when Jamal Trust Bank closed down, and I think end of 2018, because it was interacting and it was allowing Hezbollah members to engage in open bank accounts. So the Federal Reserve just shut it down. And this is when Moody's and S&P just downgraded Lebanon to, I don't have the specific numbers, but it was somewhere around B to C, and it kept downgrading it with down. And this led wealthy depositors in the Gulf and wealthy depositors, which are the expats, to start withdrawing their money. Gradually, they started withdrawing their money. And until 2019, until October 2019, the banks, after the protest and the bank run happened, they just couldn't afford to give back the money to the people. And I think in 2019 is when the so-called Ponzi started, because basically new deposit all depositors were being paid by attracting new depositors. So this is deposit that was happening. When the banks realize that they don't have money, and suddenly all of the wealthy guys want to withdraw their money, they started raising the interest rates even more to attract people like you and me and just small individuals who don't understand what's going on, and they shouldn't understand what's going on because the money is just in the bank. So they gave you 15, 10, 15% on your deposits, on your dollar deposits. You went there and you put your money there, and this money was being used to pay off the deposits of older depositors. So this is the Ponzi scheme that started in 2019. And 2019, October 2019, the Ponzi scheme got exposed and bank runs happened. The banks shut down. They stopped giving people their money. They performed capital controls. And now all you can get is printed lira for whatever price the bank sets, the central bank sets, or sees fit. So this is a like small summary about what happened and how we got into this to where we are now.
Yeah, it's a very good example, I think, of the Austrian theory, and I think it's the extent of the malinvestment, as you say, it is primarily in the government, because the government could exist with a very, very large bloated workforce of people who do practically nothing. In fact, they do worse than nothing, because if these people were just paid to take money and not show up and not do anything in their job, it would be a big improvement for society. But unfortunately, some of them do show up to the offices and they do handle important things and they do mess them up. And the most important one and the most, I think, vital is electricity. Government has been subsidizing the electricity company for something in the tune of, last time I checked, it was around $2 billion. Do you have more updated figures, or is that the correct range?
Yes, that's it.
It's around $2 billion a year of subsidy from the government to the electricity company. You're talking about a country of 5, 6, 7 million people or something like that. You don't need $2 billion of electricity for the entire country. You know, you can build cheap natural gas plants or coal plants and run the entire country on much cheaper than that. But the amount of subsidies that is being wasted on that is absolutely incredible, because the electricity company has a monopoly and the government can continue to pay for it and the government can continue to subsidize it. And as a result, the electricity sector, the electricity in Lebanon is devastated. Nobody gets 24 hours a day. If you're lucky, you'll get 20 hours a day, basically, as it is. And the cost of this, you know, having to get other subscriptions and having all this black market of tiny scale producers who have their engines all over the country, and everybody having to breathe the dirty suit of small little engines instead of having and meanwhile, you know, you have the electricity company that has large power plants that it can't operate because it is mandated by the government to sell at a low price, which ensures that it continues to make losses. So if it were to operate at full capacity, it could provide electricity for the entire country, but it can't, because it operating at full capacity would cause it to make too much losses. And the government can't. And so it continues in this equilibrium when it sucks up $2 billion of losses a year. And this is just but one example, but the entirety of the intervention of the government in the economy runs to this effect. Lebanon's private sector is amazing. So you look at industries that are run by the private sector there, they're great. But the ones that are run by the government end up being massively dysfunctional. It's quite sad.
Yes. And yes, to just add on the point of the electricity company in Lebanon, so yes, the government is basically wasting $2 billion a year. A few weeks ago, I read an article about a power plant, a nuclear power plant being built in the Emirates, which will cost them only around $35 billion So in Lebanon, we've been wasting more than that for the last 30 years, and we still don't have clean electricity. We still don't have 24/7 electricity, just because the government wants to keep its clutch on this industry and use it for the politicians, use it for their, the democratic ambitions. So
yeah, if you think about it, the $35 billion is maybe the cost of the electricity company in Lebanon, not in 17 or 18 years, probably in 4 or 5 years, because if you calculate the $2 billion is just the public deficit that is caused by the electricity company. It's,
yeah,
it's
yes,
public
exactly.
First. But think about how much more expensive electricity is and how it destroys any possibility for Lebanese industry to emerge, because electricity there is completely uncompetitive with global rates. So it's really expensive, and it's just a massive disadvantage for Lebanese industrialists, plus all the costs that it causes for everybody, and in terms of the inefficiencies and the extra costs of other subscriptions. It's a catastrophe, and it's mind-blowing that it continues to operate. And of course, the only reason it continues to operate is the fiat
just
point.
For fiat, yeah, of course. And but if you look at it now, Lebanon has the cheapest electricity in the world because it's subsidized on the on the rate of 1,500. Well, the dollar is 8,500. So yeah. Yeah, so you basically just pay like $2 for electricity entire month in Lebanon, but you don't get proper electricity. But the cost is, you're paying the cost because you cannot get, withdraw your money from the bank. So would you rather withdraw your money from the bank or just pay $2 for electricity?
And you're paying it in darkness. You're not getting electricity.
Yeah, exactly. So this is the narrative now in Lebanon, subsidies versus actual economy. You know, you wanna just eat bread today and tomorrow, or you wanna be productive and be and develop, you know, engage in progress and development. So this is what's going on, and it's an absolute mess. You were talking about so basically the only reason all of these things still survive in Lebanon is fiat money. You know, the government takes all the money in the economy and uses it to nationalize electricity and to nationalize water service, to increase government employees for whatever reason, you know, because we probably still need some employees who work at the train station, which stopped operating ever since the Civil War. This is the model that's been happening in Lebanon.
Yeah.
People put their money in the banks. The bank gives that money to the government. The government uses it as it sees fits, and it wasted it, basically.
Yeah, and you know, the lie continues that in people's mind, well, if it's the government, then it can just continue to make as much money as it wants. And then, you know, once every 30 years, or how many decades it takes, you get one of these financial explosions that effectively wipes out most of the gains that anybody made in the past 30 years. But of course, there will be people who benefit overall from this process, and there will be people who are hurt. And of course, the vast majority of the population is hurt. But the people who manage to benefit from it always, the people who manage to come out on top of this, happen to also be usually generally quite culpable for getting into this mess. In other words, the people that dug this hole are the ones that get out of it fastest. They don't go into it. Everybody else falls into it and they stay out. You know, they've got Swiss bank accounts, and they're protected from the consequences of this issue. And there is, you know, I think the problem, as people see it, for most people, the issue is, if we just manage to get the right people in power, if we just manage to vote for the right people, if we just manage to, get my guy, get this guy, get my own favorite politician in charge, then this is going to be solved. This is going to be sorted out. But of course, what ends up happening is no matter how many the politicians change, the underlying dynamic is the same. And I think the point that I'm trying to communicate in the fiat standard was really, to a very large extent, inspired by watching the Lebanese fiat Ponzi implode in real time. It's that you can point fingers and look at the people that are in charge, but it's kind of besides the point. It's an engineering design that is so messed up, that is built in a way where it is inevitable for it to fail and inevitable for it to be dysfunctional. And it's inevitable for it to be unreformable, essentially, because, I mean, you can have some reforms here and there, but the force of politics in charge of money will always push toward more printing money, more taking on risky debt, more inflation, more credit inflation, more bubbles. There's an infinite number of stupid fucking excuses that these idiots can come up with for why we need to print money. And there's no way that the people who don't want to print money can always come up with convincing, rational answers to make these fucking idiots shut up. There's an infinite number of Keynesian economic ideas of, you know, we need to print money because of this, and we need to print money because of that. And, you know, stimulating the economy or fighting a war or something or the other. There's always a stupid idea that they're going to use in order to make an excuse for printing money. And it's always going to go in that direction. It's always going to go in the direction of making the currency holder a bag holder effectively. And of course, the impact of this is not just that, you know, you rob people of money. Like if it was just robbery, you could get over it. Okay, well, taxation is robbery and people generally have learned to accept that. You could get over it with inflation if it was just robbery, if it was just taxes. But it isn't. The problem with it is that it destroys the entirety of the capital structure of society and the financial structure the society uses, because this scam only operates as long as they control the banking system. You can't build an alternative. This is, I think, the key thing is, it's not possible for a bank in Lebanon to just go and open checking accounts in US dollars and not deal with the central bank. Imagine, you know, you and I just go and set up a bank where we have a branch and, you know, we're independent of the central bank and we just take deposits in physical US dollars and we hold them in a safe and we clear payments for you internationally and we hold a checking account for you in physical dollars. Like, imagine if you offered a service like that in Lebanon. I think within 1 week, everybody would take their money out of the Lebanese central bank monopoly system and put it in that, you know, free market mom and pop bank that has a connection to some foreign bank and manages to clear your money and offers, you know,
this is actually happening. I don't know if you heard about it, but there's an independent bank from the central bank, which is being operated by Hezbollah. It's basically letting people get their dollars and giving out dollars at ATMs and whatever. A few days ago, it just got hacked, and now I think the entire hack thing is just, they're just trying to shut it down somehow. But the way it operates is that if you want to put money in that bank, you have to have collateral in gold. So they're doing something like this.
It's independent of the Lebanese central bank?
Yes.
But it uses Lebanese central bank ATMs?
It uses an ATM that just gives out dollars.
But it has its own ATMs, not the Lebanese bank?
Yes. It has its own ATMs. But no one has too much information about this. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't openly advertise something like this and set it up.
Exactly. It started as a peace organization or something, as an NGO, and now it developed into a bank.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's still not possible to have something like this operating legally, even though you think about it. That's a very simple thing to do, like a Jordanian bank or a Cypriot bank or a Turkish bank. They could just operate a physical branch in Lebanon and have nothing to do with the Lebanese central bank, but they can't. Because if they did that, you know, the entirety of the Lebanese currency would collapse and everybody would take their money out of the Lebanese banking system And the government would have to pay its bills in hard currencies like everybody else. And the central bank would have to either offer a competitive banking system or get out of business. But they can't because they have a monopoly. And I think, you know, up until 2013, 14, I used to think, you know, I was more of a gold bug. 2014, 2015, I would say even maybe. I was more of a gold bug who used to think that, you know, this thing can be sorted out politically, or it has to be sorted out politically. You would need the political authorities to decide to move to money. But I think the political process, as I was saying earlier, is just so geared towards money printing that you can't really see it being reformed politically. And in that world, really the only option, the only alternative that continues to work, that can get you international settlement clearance and can get you a saving account and can allow you to send money internationally, it's Bitcoin. And that's really the only alternative. And so for me, I think it's the real solution to the problem that is at the heart of everything that is wrong in Lebanon, which is the fact that the government is able to just destroy the value of money in order to finance all of the stupid things that it does. And as long as you're continuing to insist on trying to reform the government and get the government to fix things, you're just supporting them by giving them more power. And the only way that you can get out of that cycle is Bitcoin. But not a lot of people seem to agree. So tell us, how has Bitcoin helped in this cycle? So what has it been like having Bitcoin, knowing Bitcoin? How has Bitcoin taken off?
Yeah, so as I was saying earlier, I got into Bitcoin way before the crisis. But as the crisis took place, I started understanding, or the people around me started understanding Bitcoin more. They started understanding the use case of Bitcoin and why it's important and why the lira or even the USD is not the greatest thing to hold. So as the crisis took off, many people were still hopeful for, you know, any type of reform, or maybe the exchange rate will just get fixed somehow, or maybe a new government could be formed to, you know, put things back on, to fix things, if you want to say. But now it's almost 1 year. It's more than 1 year since the financial crisis has started, and most people are just fed up. And when I say people, I mean people like you, like me, and just ordinary people from the bottom. People who are just small entrepreneurs, people who just want to send money to their family, who live abroad and just want to send money to their family. People who want to somehow just save their money from inflation. All these people got interested in Bitcoin. And I talked to many of them in 2019 and 2020, more than ever in Lebanon. So the use case of Bitcoin was basically in Lebanon, probably for like three reasons. Many people who are working online use Bitcoin to get paid, especially, you know, small entrepreneurs, because of the banking restrictions. And, you know, when you get the dollars from abroad, there's a high chance that the bank would not let you withdraw them. So Bitcoin is a better alternative to get paid. The second use case was for, you know, families in Lebanon who were receiving funds from their offspring working abroad, because sending money through the bank, as I said, was impossible. You have to open a special account which accepts fresh dollars, as they call it, which is not available for everyone. Not everyone can open this account. And even if you open this account, the bank closes down at 12 p.m. You cannot go and withdraw anymore. And there's always many people there, and you have to wait in line. And all it's a complete mess. And if you want your money to be sent via conventional ways like OMT or Western Union, the central bank was doing a form of confiscation of this money. Right now they stopped, but they were doing this. Let's say you got $1,000. You couldn't physically get the $1,000. They would give you instead Lebanese lira at a fake peg. So you would lose somewhere around 30 or 40% of the money you were receiving. So people abroad were sending money to their offspring using Bitcoin, because Bitcoin, you don't need a middleman. You just get your Bitcoin, you either keep your Bitcoins or just liquidate them in a peer-to-peer market. And finally, it's good for those who saw the devastation of hyperinflation and finally realized that there could be a better way to whatever they have amount to be saved, they just put it in Bitcoin. And these people saw their, unlike others in Lebanon, saw their savings increase by double and triple to what it was. So this is the use case of Bitcoin in Lebanon. And what's great about it is that your local bank or your local politician or your local intellectual person who just has some democratic aspiration, they never talk about Bitcoin. They instead talk about maybe new people in the government. They talk about trying to get the money back, the depositors of the money of the depositors, by doing all sorts of meaningless investigations and audits, and they invite the people to go down to the streets and to protesting, because if you protest harder, you will get better results. And you know,
what other primitive technologies have been people trying for monetary reform? Let's compare Bitcoin, which has managed to get people to get their money out. I mean, I speak personally, you know, I had my money, I got it out of Lebanon using Bitcoin. I still lost money on speculating on the Lebanese shitcoin, because my university jobs, retirement money was still stuck up in the Lebanese shitcoin. So I lost money from that. But the only reason I got what was left from it was because of Bitcoin. And, you know, people keep talking about Bitcoin not being bought for coffee. I presume people in Lebanon are still not buying coffee with Bitcoin, right? No, they're not. But a lot of people have managed to, you know, save significant amounts of their life savings by getting into Bitcoin. They've managed to get their money out of the country by putting it into Bitcoin, encrypting it in energy and traveling and leaving or sending it abroad. So a lot of people have successfully avoided inflation, hyperinflation, and avoided banking sanctions from Bitcoin. And there's now an active Lebanese Bitcoiners group on Telegram where you can buy and sell. It's almost like an informal exchange that that is growing massively in size. And we'll post some links to some of these groups in the show notes. Bitcoin de Liban is the name of one.
Bitcoin de Liban is basically the community group. We just teach newcomers. They ask us questions. It's a Bitcoin maximalist group. No shitcoinery whatsoever.
Nice.
We just talk about Bitcoin. We talk about Austrian economics. We talk about technology. And for all my Lebanese, for all your Lebanese listeners, join that group. It's very beneficial. And there's other groups which are specifically for trading. BTC Marketplace, one of them is called. We just put down your order. Someone will answer you. And right now, there's a lot of people who work as an exchange, as independent exchange. They are very well known and they are very trustworthy. You just meet with them, give them the money. They give you the coins. But there's the only one issue in Lebanon, that we still don't have a proper peer-to-peer platform, which includes escrow technology. So we've been trying, and I'm going to say this from your podcast. I want to, if anyone listening to me who can do that, implement that in Lebanon, that would be great. It's a great market. It's a growing market. So we just still need that, because there's a lot of people who are still afraid to meet others and give them money. It's still a bit intimidating to some, but I can assure you that the people who are in this community, most of them are well known and they have a good reputation. And the peer-to-peer market is only growing. As I said earlier, back in 2017, 2016, I would go on localbitcoins.com. I wouldn't find anyone selling Bitcoin. I'd have to wait and ask around. But now it's super easy. You just go on this group. You just ask people, you just ask on our group, community group. There are a lot of people who are willing to guide you step by step on how to buy your first Bitcoin, how to set up your first wallet, and how to keep your Bitcoins secure and all of these things.
The development of the Bitcoin community in Lebanon has kind of been hampered because the central bank is very conservative.
Yes.
And therefore, it was very, it was very prudent by preventing any businesses from dealing with Bitcoin, preventing any banks from dealing with Bitcoin, and not allowing any businesses to even transfer money, and not even allowing banks to transfer money to exchanges abroad. So the idea that they were going to let an exchange happen was completely out of the question. So that there isn't an exchange because the central bank doesn't like competition. And now you can see why. Like, if there was an exchange, it would have been enormously it would have been enormously unsafe, not for the Lebanese people, but for the Lebanese central. So, but still, you know, a peer-to-peer Telegram group and market is developing, and it is growing, and a lot more people are doing it. And people still like to laugh about Bitcoin. People still think Bitcoin is a stupid joke. But a lot of people in Lebanon have avoided financial ruin because they had a small position in Lebanon that in Bitcoin, and that position in Bitcoin has appreciated significantly, while their position in liras has lost 50, 60, 70, 80, maybe even 90% of their money. So in real terms, a lot of people have done well because of Bitcoin. You know, Thomas, you don't worry too much about your bank saving account. You don't need to save in anything. You have saving technology that is available to you. Now, what other alternatives have been people trying for doing this? One of my favorites is a lot of activists, particularly among intellectuals, have this idea that, you know, what we need is an audit of the banking system that will reveal the theft, and then we will be able to get the money back and return it to the depositors in the banks. So tell us more about why this is such a beautifully good idea.
Yes. So in Lebanon, you have two narratives. The first one is, I don't want to do anything with the bank. I just want to store my money in physical dollars. A lot of people have physical, you know, banknotes, dollars, which probably you cannot find even in the United States. So they just put them in their safes and in their houses. And that's all right. The other narrative to some people, and as you said, the intellectuals, is to try to fix the current financial system, try to fix it again. And how to do that is to perform investigation, perform some sort of an audit, and nationalize the banks. I don't know how that could work. So this is the narrative they're trying to feed the people, instead of focusing on the person, the Lebanese person, the Lebanese citizen who's trying to regain his job back, regain his wealth back. He doesn't want to play the role of a revolutionary anymore, because right now he needs money. He needs money to eat. He needs money to work, to go to work. To some people, going to work has become more expensive than their salary. If your car is suddenly broken, you cannot fix it anymore because car parts are very expensive in lira terms. So if your salary is somewhere around $200 a month, you cannot fix your car. If you cannot even change your tires. So this is what's going on in Lebanon, and everyone is just focusing on how to fix the problem from the top, how to bring back the money. And one of the solutions is to get a third party auditor, something like, I heard it was KPMG, and they wanted to get them to do a forensic audit on the banks and to see where the money went prior to the financial crisis in 2019. Somehow they want to audit the central bank. They want to see where the SWIFT payments went. And to them, this is somehow traceable. But so far, they haven't implemented this. And if they want to implement this, this would even will cost the government even more money, more public expenditure. And in my personal opinion, it will not lead to anywhere because the money was not simply spent on anything, or I mean, it was not just put from one safe or one bank account to the other. It was more like spent on socialism. It was spent on welfare. Some people say that Lebanon doesn't have socialism, but it doesn't have socialism in the conventional or the normal definition. Like we don't have the best public schools or the best public healthcare.
That's Lebanon, that's socialism. It's never good.
Exactly. But I'm gonna go along and say this. But no, Lebanon,
the electricity company itself is an enormous monument to socialism. It's Lebanon has an electricity problem, and you always see streetlights lit during the day. It has been something that you have seen in the country for 30 years. People have taken it as normal. People have stopped joking about it. It's normal to see streetlights on in the year because they don't.
And it's off during the night.
And yeah, they can be as incompetent as they want, and it absolutely faces no consequences. People have just normalized it because it's an entire company that gets $2 billion a year to fail, basically. And the more they fail, the more dollars they get. So this is, I think, the particularly stupid thing about it. Like, people honestly believe that there was a thief that took the money. And like, it's just about figuring out who it was. Like, it was one of these sly bankers / politicians magically got into the central bank safes at night, or maybe to the digital and you know, used the central bank computer and took billions of the depositors' money and sent him to his bank account in Switzerland, as if this was like a Bond film in the 1960s. This is not how this works. The money has been wasted on the electricity company. There's nobody to get it from. The money has been wasted on people who have been getting a salary for 30 years from the electricity company without even turning up to the office. And some people who do turn up to the office and spend the whole day messing up the electricity company so that they are needed and they can get bribed. And so they're constantly messing with people so that they can get a bribe in order to stop messing with people. That's where the money has been spent over 30 years. The currency has been destroyed because it's accumulated all of this risk over the last 30 years. And the only way, the only way this stops is with hard money. The only solution to this is hard money. It's so profoundly stupid to think that you can get the same people who have rode this system, the same political system that has used this to get into power and has used it to become powerful and to enrich its supporters and followers, that you could just use that system to investigate itself. And then, you know, they'll turn up the investigation results, and we'll figure out who took the money, and then we'll throw them in jail, and we'll take our money back, and we'll have our currency back, and we'll have our old economy back, and everything will be fine. I think there are still people like that who believe this is the case. But there is absolutely no hope of this happening because I think these people miss the fact of just the true cost of economic destruction, of economic waste, of economic socialism, of central planning, of something like the Lebanese electricity company. The cost is so enormous for society at large that it ends up causing all of those things. And it's the economic destruction that has been happening over 30 years, which has been getting papered over by fake credit money and then fake paper money. Eventually it blows up and it shows up in terms of inflation. And, you know, people can joke around as much as they want about Bitcoin and about Bitcoin's volatility, but it is the only answer to this. It is the only fix because it is the only hard money. It's the only way that you can get out of this system, because it's the only way that you can have your own wealth not get expropriated. And if more people put their wealth in Bitcoin rather than delusionally try and reform the system by giving the people in charge of it more power, I think, you know, Bitcoin would do far more to help in this regard. And it's depressing that how hard it is to communicate this point. I remember a few months ago, the lira was still at half, at double where it was today. So it was around $4,000, 4,000 liras a dollar. And I remember I was giving a talk to a group of Lebanese political activists and so on, and you know, trying to explain Bitcoin. And the first question I get was, well, but without a central bank, what guarantees the value of Bitcoin? And this is somebody who just witnessed their central bank guaranteed currency lose about two-thirds of its value over a year. And in their mind, and Bitcoin had at that point appreciated untold numbers of times against the lira. And in her mind, it still needed a central bank to guarantee it. And it's just, it's a mind virus. This idea of state provision of money is just, it's a mind virus that captures people that they can't step out of it. Like it has to be the government. As long as they believe that it has to be the government capturing the money, then all of their best attempts at political reform are completely misguided and counterproductive, because no matter how well-intentioned you and your fellow political activists and political parties are, all that you're doing is just perpetuating the system whereby people in power can get whatever they want at the expense of the currency, because they can always abuse the currency. That's all that you're doing. All of your activism is actually doing is that it is strengthening the system of government control of money rather than weakening it.
Exactly. Yes, and so the socialism in Lebanon is just in form of employees and government employees. Everyone knows someone in Lebanon who's in a government position or benefited from this money through a government welfare, as I call them, welfare employment. So this is where socialism lies in Lebanon. And this is where the money basically went. It did not go into the pockets of the politicians, did not go to...
I mean, I'm sure they've stolen the money.
Yeah,
no question about it. But they didn't steal the entire wealth of the country and all the savings accounts.
Exactly.
That was destroyed. That was not stolen.
That was destroyed. And, you know, socialism has its cost, and we paid for it. The people paid for this cost. The money just doesn't grow on tree. And I think the point regarding the money being trying to get back the money that went away, these people tend to forget that an economy doesn't have to have a certain supply of money in order to function. You can just work with whatever left and try to rebuild. This should be the narrative, to try and rebuild, get the government away from make it stop intervening with the prices, stop intervening with the market, stop trying to print more money to pay off the debt. All you need is just the money that currently exists in the economy and build that way. This is the bust phase, right? So now we have, if you come to Lebanon, the prices in dollars are all much cheaper, right? So because we don't have a lot of dollars in the economy anymore, everything is now much cheaper. Back in the day when a lot of dollars were artificially coming into the country, Lebanon was basically one of the most expensive countries in the world. It's even more expensive. You know, Beirut was more expensive than Paris and London, or maybe just as expensive.
There was also a real estate bubble as well at that point.
Yes, also the real estate bubble, which happened because of the also because of fiat money, because of the subsidized loans on real estate purchases. So what was happening back then is that you can get whatever loan you want for 0% interest rates, and just buy whatever apartment you want. And this led to a big surge in real estate development. You go to Beirut now, or you go to any coastal city in Lebanon, you see just a big sea of concrete, ugly buildings. Back in the day, maybe before the Civil War, we had nice buildings with stone, built with stone, and nice brick roofs. And these buildings were basically what sets Lebanon as a culture or the architectural culture of Lebanon. But with the subsidized loans, all this was basically destroyed. So yeah, that's another form, another part of
one,
another
one other
of
interesting
socialism.
Development actually worth mentioning. One other thing that I wanted to bring up was amazing the fiat food connection, which happened after the currency was destroyed. Tell us about how the Lebanese government fought the food crisis and the availability of food. Let's take a guess. Tell us.
Yes. So in Lebanon, you have bread, subsidized bread. You have subsidized seed oil. You have subsidized a bunch of vegetables, maybe. A lot of things that are subsidized. They even subsidized coffee. They subsidized many useless things that you would rather just get your money back instead. So they even subsidized nuts and chips and some awful, not needed things. And once they did this, once they subsidized some of these products, you couldn't find them anymore in the supermarket. They tried to subsidize, this is a funny story, they tried to subsidize the eggs. So in a box of eggs, you get 50 eggs. Okay, they mandated that put price fixation that you should only sell eggs, this box of eggs, for something around 25,000. So the supermarkets couldn't afford doing that. So they started selling this box, but half of it for 25,000.
Yeah.
So if you don't do that, the police would come in and they would try to stop you from selling eggs all over. So this is the subsidies that happened in Lebanon, and this is what's basically keeping or trying to keep the people shut down. As long as you can afford to, you know, eat bread, you can afford to fill up your car with gas, you can afford to, you know, you can afford internet. Internet is now subsidized as well. People are just, they don't, or they do care, but they're like more, they think that this whole thing is justifiable. Because nowadays, if you tell the people, what if we just remove the subsidies and try to rebuild an economy based on the free market, and you can get lower prices based on the free market, and people can instead of destroying their wealth, they can create wealth. They would think you're just trying to put people in famine. They don't want to remove subsidies. This is justifiable because the poor and the kids and the children, they want to eat. So we can't just stop subsidies right now. But the consequences are...
And of course, you know, it's a vicious cycle, because more subsidies, they destroy the value of the currency and they destroy the value
exactly.
of the depositors. And then things become more expensive, so you then need more subsidies. It's the road to serfdom, basically. And Ahmed in the chat is mentioning that some of the subsidized commodities were found in Turkey and Kuwait markets.
Yes.
People are taking subsidized goods and selling them abroad. And also the subsidized fuel is being sold abroad as well. It's being exported to Syria. And of course, you know, economic subsidies are just a thoroughly stupid thing, because it strengthens the misallocation of resources. It prevents a market from happening. And it's sad. There is a sense that sometimes you think, well, then the crisis will happen and the crisis will clean things up and the people who got into a crisis would be bankrupt. This is how things existed under the gold standard. Like, if you went bankrupt under the gold standard, you lost power, and there had to be a complete revamp. Effectively, there had to be new management. But under the fiat standard, you know, you lose power, you just keep printing more, and you print more, and you devalue the currency more, and you keep making things worse and worse and worse, because you continue to contain to hold the monopoly on international payment settlement, basically. And that's really the amazing thing about Bitcoin. So my advice to all the Lebanese listeners, stop trying to think that you can fix Lebanese politics. Stop paying attention to it and opt out with Bitcoin. That's the only thing that can make a difference individually and collectively. It's the only thing that can really make a difference. It's And it's sad. It's sad. And it's not just true for the Lebanese people. I think everywhere. I think it's just the idea of having politics in charge of money is just completely unworkable as a technological solution. If your proof of work system relies on laws and police enforcement and armies and military, just replace it with a proof of work algorithm. That's all, really what I think it comes down to.
Yes, that's just wanted to say one point regarding the subsidies and how they're trying to keep them going. The central bank recently just announced a central bank digital currency, which this could be used as a try to keep their eyes on whatever you are trying to buy. And if you want to sell your products to Turkey or to Syria, you can't do that now, because or when the CBDC is up, they'll try to stop you from doing that. So we are in this stage of complete collapse. They are now thinking of a central bank digital currency.
Yeah, central bank digital currency is exactly what you need, Alan in the chat is asking, is it XRP? It's going to make XRP look good, I think.
Yes.
Lebanon is a good illustration about the motive behind it. Like, for the central bank to go and introduce its own digital currency is just, at this point, it's clear that they're doing it because they're bankrupt, and it's effectively a way of making it faster for them to appropriate more of the value that people store in the national currency. And it's really sad if they end up managing to succeed. Like, I think if the Lebanese central bank manages to pull off a digital currency and people manage to use it, it would be really sad, because there's only one way in which that currency is going to head, and that way is down, down, down. It's going to continue to collapse in value, and it's just going to be... and the sad thing about it is, if Lebanon was a country that was on hard money and it was this badly managed, then once they run out of their own money, they can't print any more money. They are bankrupt. There's no changing that reality that they are bankrupt. When you introduce fiat money, all that you do is that you allow them to milk the rest of society for another year or two or decade or five decades of just continuously bankrupting every single entity in society that has any capital left. Until then, all of society's capital stock is destroyed, and then they're bankrupted. So, they were bankrupt. I mean, think about it this way: if you were bankrupt with hard money, you're going to remain bankrupt with easy money. If you get to print money, it's not going to magically make you solvent. It's just allowing you to export your insolvency onto the suckers who hold your national currency.
I agree. And regarding that point that I also said earlier, that the narrative in Lebanon by the conventional economists is that Lebanon doesn't have dollars. Let's say we're living in the dollar standard right now, so Lebanon is out of dollars. So this is the problem. Lebanon is out of dollars. This is not the problem that people are dismissing this. You can rebuild the economy based on whatever money you have. All you need to do is just liquidate the malinvestments and try to build from here, and just dump the Lebanese lira altogether. It's just a useless translation of the dollar anyway. But since that cannot happen, and I'm pretty sure a scenario of dollarization is far-fetched, or it will happen eventually, but after like 4 or 5 years, just like what happened in Venezuela, I urge people in Lebanon to, just opt out from the Lebanese lira, opt out from the dollar, opt out from the government altogether. You're not too late for Bitcoin. Just put some money there. And I know you're not going to get paid in Bitcoin right now in your Lebanese job, but just by... at least putting your Lebanese lira in Bitcoin, and instead of switching from Lebanese lira to banknotes, dollars, which I don't think anyone uses this anymore. I mean, your listeners here, probably most of them are from the United States or or even Europe, I don't think anyone in these countries use a banknote. So basically, your banknote is useless without a corresponding bank to it. You cannot use it for payments internationally. If you decide to maybe leave this country, you cannot just. It's impossible to just hold it with you and take it to another country. Maybe that country will not let you open a bank account. So, you know, dollar notes are just as useless. They're probably better than Lebanese lira, but they're not the best option out there. And since you cannot open a bank account and since you don't trust the bank in Lebanon, Bitcoin is just so obvious right now. If people in Lebanon don't get into Bitcoin now, they will never get into Bitcoin.
Eventually everybody, I think, will get Bitcoin. I think, Bitcoin adoption in Lebanon. So the stupid way of measuring Bitcoin adoption is how many copies are being sold for Bitcoin. In my mind, the correct way of measuring Bitcoin adoption is in terms of how much of the cash balances in any particular place are in Bitcoin. So currently Bitcoin is about 0.5% maybe of world cash balances. So it's less than 1% of the world cash balances. That's really Bitcoin's adoption. Bitcoin's share of Lebanese cash balances went up enormously over the last year. And so Bitcoin's real adoption in Lebanon went up enormously, not just because it actually went up in terms of more people buying Bitcoin. The main driver of Bitcoin adoption has been the destruction of the Lebanese lira. When the Lebanese lira has been destroyed by 50, 60, 70% of its value, if Bitcoin was 0.1% of the total money supply and the lira loses 80% of its value, then Bitcoin suddenly becomes about 0.5%, just without even growing. And then you add the significant appreciation in the terms of significant appreciation in terms of Bitcoin, in the real market value of Bitcoin increasing, you see that, you know, Bitcoin adoption is growing. And this is what I tried to communicate in the Bitcoin standard about Bitcoin not being optional. You know, it's Bitcoin's going to continue to grow in value as money because it is better money, and all the other bad money are going to be dissolved in value. You know, their value is going to dissolve into either into an industrial use, if they have one, or into zero paper money, zero credit money, if it doesn't. And the only money that's going to, or the majority of value, we're going to continuously accrue to Bitcoin. And that's really the dynamic that is constantly taking place. And I think really there's an old saying, I'm not sure, it is in Lebanese, and I think it's an Arabic saying in general, not just in Lebanon. بدك عنب أو بدك تقاتل الناطور. I tweeted this out. It's not very easy to translate it, so I didn't tweet it in English, didn't translate it, but I can translate the context here. It says, you know, do you want to eat grapes or do you want to fight with the guard? Because there are easy ways of eating grapes without having to fight the guard. But some people just want to fight with the guard. Some people seem to be more concerned with wanting to fight the guard than they are about eating grapes. And so I really think Bitcoin is an example of this. Like, if you actually want, if you want to solve the problem, if you want to save people from, if you want to save yourself, of course, and most importantly, from getting the banking system destroyed, if you want to save yourself from having to be reliant on your local banking kleptocracy, Bitcoin is the answer. That's it. Bitcoin is all that you want. It's a saving account, and it's a better saving account than any saving technology that humanity has ever had. It just continues to appreciate, and it continues to appreciate every year, or not every year, but in the long run, it's always up, and it's up enormously. And you can send it all over the world, and it's very easy to store and very easy to, well, not easy to store, but relative to storing things with your local bank, it is very easy because at least you get to store it and it stays stored. It doesn't get destroyed because the bank and the central bank prints money. So Bitcoin is the practical solution to this. And is a, you know, if you want to eat the grapes, if it's a bit like a fee Bitcoin, really, you can have Bitcoin and you can use it. And if you just want to keep fighting about it, if you want to get into power, if you want to get the right people into power, it's just an endless power struggle that gets nowhere. And Lebanese politics, you know, if you've, I don't particularly follow them closely, but, you know, it goes nowhere and it achieves nothing. And allowing politics to have control over the money is what makes politics so high stakes and so destructive and so dangerous. And really, opting out is the only way that can work. If people who just continue to think that things can be reformed are simply, unfortunately, just contributing to the status quo.
And I just wanted to make the point, I tweeted out yesterday that I don't care about Bitcoin as much as I care about you caring about Bitcoin. Because everyone that got into Bitcoin and talked to me about Bitcoin, they simply changed. They're new people. They think more about their future, while everyone else in Lebanon, they're just lost. They don't know what to do with their lives. Bitcoiners in Lebanon, they're just thinking about the moon. They're thinking they're going to be rich next year. And if they stack more now, they're going to have more next year. And it's just giving them hope. You know, Michael Saylor said it, Bitcoin is hope. And I think this is true. This is the truth. And the main reason why I want people to get into Bitcoin, not because I'm trying to sell Bitcoin. Bitcoin sells itself. I just want the people around me, my community, the society, the Lebanese society, to get into this technology because it will change them a lot. And I'm gonna be very honest with you. I mean, in the last few years in Lebanon, we saw a lot of people, you know, they don't have hope in anything, and they just went down the road of, you know, cultural degeneracy. We probably saw that in Lebanon. I think Bitcoin can change that. I know the people who got into it. They're thriving. They're not just they were not just saved. They're on top of the world. So this is my message to the people who in Lebanon who want to get into Bitcoin. You will get into it for the gains. You will get into it for opting out, but eventually you will be a different person. I'm personally a different person ever since I got into it.
Bitcoin fixes everything is the final cheerful message of this. All right. Well, thank you very much, Thomas, for joining. And thank you, everybody else, for the chat and the comments. And we will see you in the next week. And Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Thanks.